Does anybody have a pen, like an extra pen? Ah, great. Can we do the same thing, like where we come down here? Like, I know it's painful, but it helps. So just like try to occupy the first six rows. So you guys over in the back, come forward. Okay, so let's go over one of the quiz questions. Charles, can I log into this? All right, good afternoon, everybody. Let's get started. So there were some requests to go over the quiz questions. Okay, is there a question in particular that we want to go over? Is there a concept that we want to go over?
So in the quiz, one of the questions was about loop unrolling. It was saying that the NDS.
Is this a pre-quiz or post-quiz question?
This was pre-quiz.
Okay, I think.
Pre-quiz, we'll cover that probably first day.
Yeah. Was there a post-quiz question that anybody, did we want to go over pre-quiz or post-quiz stuff? Post-quiz? Okay. Was there a post-quiz question? Oh, the whole quiz? Yes. Okay, so can you remind me of the question? It's a 32 kilobyte cache. Byte cache, sorry. And then there's eight byte blocks. And it's storing things that are 4 bytes long. Is that right? And so the first thing was that it was a fully associative cache. Can you guys see this? Fully associative. Cache, and in the fully associative cache, we need to calculate how many. There's only one set, right? And so you can kind of think of it as just having one set, and it's going to be 8-byte blocks. So there're going to be 8 of these bytes, and the thing that we're storing in it takes up 4 of those bytes. So there's 8 bytes total in the block. And the thing that we're storing in the cache takes up 4 of those bytes. And so we need to work out, well, how many blocks are in this cache? So there's 32. Sorry, I'll just kind of do this kind of simply. So it'll be 32 divided by 8. And 32 is 2 to the fifth. and 8 is 2 to the third. And so there are 2 to the 2 blocks in this cache. So it's just 4. So there are 4 of these 8-byte blocks. Four of these 8-byte blocks in the cache.
So was there like a specific, do you remember the addresses off the top of your head, or if you have them written down, I could just write them down here.
I think it was like 00.
Oh, you have them here, great.
So there's 00, thank you, 04, 08, 0, C, 44, 48, 4C, 050, 054, 00, 040, 080, 0XC, 00, 044, 080, 04C. And so these were the addresses. And so we need to figure out where these addresses get loaded in our byte structure. So they're going to be four of these 8 bytes. So I'll draw this out. Three. And so the address is byte addressable. So the number of offset bits, right, because there's 8 blocks, the number of offset bits is going to be 3, because 2 to the third will give us 8. And so there will be 3 offset bits for in our address. So the last 3 bits will give us our values for our address. And because it's fully associative, everything else is the tag. So the tag that's associated with this block, the tag that's associated with this block, and so on. Okay, and so for the first one, we're gonna pull in 0 through 3. So we'll have 0, 0 all the way through 2 addresses, right? So it will be, maybe we'll map these just for simplicity. So 0, 1, 2. C would be our third one. Just kind of work this out carefully here. So 0, 0 would be our first set of addresses, and then this would translate to 1, 2, 3 zeros. And so it would pull in addresses, a lot of addresses actually, 0 through 1, 1. 0 through 1, 1, 1. And so this would be 2 to the 1 is 1, 2, 1, 2, and 4, so 7. So it would have, actually maybe an easier way to think about this is think about this as some array, and then these are indices into the array. So instead of thinking about it as the bit and byte offsets, you could have these as some array, and so this would be value at index 0 in the array, value at index 1, because we'll think about this as an array of integers that is 4 bytes long. And so we can divide each of these by 4. So it'll be 0, 4, 2. C is to the 13th, I guess. Let's see. A, B, C. So 10, 11, sorry, 12. So this would be our third one. 44 is 4 times 16 plus 4. So 4 times 16 would be 4 sixes are 24.
I guess I could pull up a calculator here. That would just make it super easy to do this conversion. So I don't have to step through this painfully. Hex to decimal.
Hex to decimal converter. And so 44 would be 68. 48 would be 69. 4C is 76. Actually, I'll just bring this over here so we can do this.
So that would be the 76th element in the array.
And 50 would be 50. These are just kind of tedious. Is there like a, well.
Oh,
yeah, sorry, I forgot to divide by four. hold on 1 second. It's easy to divide by four, by four, by four, by four. Because it's 4 bits for each of them. So this is just kind of a, I guess there's a faster way to kind of go through and do that. So this would be 17. Oops. I wonder if there's like a, yeah, that one's wrong. So 72. Do we want to just do these conversions? Because I don't have a calculator on me, so that's the harder part. 18, 19, 20.
Yeah, consecutive.
Oh, they're consecutive. Thank you. Didn't even notice that. Yeah, so 17, 18, 19, 20, 0, 1, 2, 3, 0, 1, 2, and 3. And so, oops, can you guys see this? So now the question is which ones get pulled in to the array? And so the first one, we're going to pull in 0 and 1, the first two integers, because or cache block holds two ints. So we'll pull in 0 and 1. And then the next time, so this one's going to be a miss, and this one's going to be a hit. So that's one hit, one one miss, one hit. Then the second one pulls in the second value in the array. And so this here would be one block. And the integer values. Whoops, I should have been more careful here. I'll do this here so that we can not have a bunch of confusion for drawing this out. So there are four of these 8-byte blocks, and they each hold two ints, so 0, 1. And then the next one would be 2, 3. So this would be 2 would be a miss, 3 would be a hit. And then the next thing it pulls in is going to be 16 and 17. And then after that, 18. So 18 and 19. So
questions?
So this was a miss. 18 was a miss. 19 is a hit. And so now we're at 20 here, and so we need to go ahead and figure out which ones of these we replace.
Do you remember? Yeah.
No, so if you look at the lower index, so remember the offset bits are what get set, right? So here we have an offset of 3 bits long. And so the rest is going to be the tag. So when I access something in this block, 17 is going to be odd. So it's going to be lower than the 00 set of bits. So I'm going to pull the things that are above it. So 17 would be 1 something something. 100. And so I would pull the thing that's before it, which is 00, which would be 16. Yes. So you, no. If you're thinking about it as an array, so 0 and 1, these are array indices, and these would be 4 bytes long because they're interarrays. So when I load 0, I load the next value in the array at index 1. So like you could imagine the array being a 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on. And so when I load 0 here, I'm going to load this 1 as well in 2 bytes. In each of these are 4 bytes, and my block is 8 bytes, so I load both of them, 0 and 1. And then for the one where I'm loading 17, 17 is here, and 16 is here, and it's a part of the same byte block, so I pull in 16 and 17 together. Yeah, so I'm gonna, I think I understand the discrepancy. So 4 is a byte address. So imagine that we have, we're just looking at the first two values in the array. So it'd be 0, 1, 2, 3. That would be our first integer. 4, 5, 6, 7. So this is our hex value. So you can think of these as all hex because they're less than 9, so they're the same. So my first integer would be 1, and that's going to be 00001. Oh, sorry, 0, sorry, 0. And then my next one's going to be 1. And so you can imagine that as already 00, 00001. So when I'm pulling in these bytes, I'm going to pull in all of the 4 bytes associated with the first integer and the 4 bytes associated with the second integer. And that makes up my total 8-byte block. OK. So what was the eviction strategy? Was it least recently used?
Yes.
So LRU. So here, this block would be the one that's least recently used, right? And so we're at 20 here. And so we need to pick which block to evict. And so we're going to evict to this one. And so this one's going to pull in 20 and 21. And so this one's going to be a miss, and then a hit. And now we're going to access 0. But remember, we just removed 0, 1 from here. So this is going to be a miss. And we're going to need to bring something in. So we're going to bring in 2 bytes here, 0, 1. So this would be a hit. And then the next one accesses 2, which we just evicted. And so we're going to. This is going to be a miss. And we're going to bring in 2 and 3. And then 3 is going to be a hit. And then when we look at the last one, 0, 1, that's in the cache. So this will be a hit. Hit. 2 will be a hit. And 3 will be a hit. Yes. Yeah, I can write it out. So if you do 0x44 in binary, and you look at it, you're going to get 4, 0, 1, 0, 0. And yep, that's right. And so the offset range here, right? If we were supposed to draw out all of these offset ranges, it would go 0, 0, 0, all the way to 1, 1, 1, 1, and 0, 0 to 0, the first 4 bytes, I guess, would be 16. So 0 to 16 would be our first set, and then 17 onward. So I'm not sure what 17 is in hex. Oh, 0, 5, 4, 5. So it would be from, this would be our second byte, or second int, and then this would be our first integer. And so when we're pulling in, we're going to pull in this entire range here. So we pull in from 0, 0 to 1, 1, and this is going to be 16 to 17. The way you can kind of think of it, if you don't want to, if it's kind of tricky to see this here, is that you can think of the array as being divided into chunks. And it's just evens and odds. And so if you bring in an odd, you're going to bring in its associated even. Any other questions? It's still not clear? Ask another question.
So let's think about like the even and odd. So basically it's one already. So does that mean we have to pull in like an even number associated with that? So it would be.
So for the 17th element in the array, right? There are going to be a bunch of numbers before. And if the blocks are arranged in this even odd format, then when we access this block, this last thing in the block, right, we have to pull in the whole block together. So we're going to pull in the even and odd part of the block. So 0 and, or 16, which is the even pair, and 17. Similarly, if we had accessed like 19, we would pull in 18 as well. That's why when we accessed the even one of 0, we pull in 1, because we're pulling in all 8 bytes associated with the block.
So is there more than one block in this set? Is that like the same as what the textbook calls lines?
So lines, yeah. So in the textbook, the notion of lines can include tag bits. But lines and blocks are equivalent.
Is that like, if there's like 2 lines per set, is that the same as like a 2-way?
Yes, exactly. So the example with 2 lines per set would look like this. Or 2 blocks. So here's your single set of 0, and then your next set of 1. And so here you'd have whatever your block size is, and then a duplicate block of the same size. And the way we would distinguish these two is that there would be tag bits here. And then when we have a hit, we look at both tag bits for matches. So any other questions? And then we just go through and count hits and misses. OK. So we'll move on. Thank you. So as we continue our discussion of caches, we had this general idea that a cache was just a smaller, faster, but more expensive memory that stores as kind of subsets of blocks in main memory. So in this case, we have a subset 4, 9, 10, and 3. And we let the CPU access this kind of quick cache. And whenever we need something that's not in the cache, we can go to memory. And we have a bunch of strategies for keeping memory and the cache consistent. And so this is kind of our kind of grand idea. And so we looked at this example earlier where we had these arrays. And the array was 4 kilobytes in size. And our cache was a direct map cache that was only 2K in size. So only half of the array could fit in cache at any time. And we had blocks that were 16 bytes. And since it's storing ints and ints are 4 bytes, each block can store 4 integers. And we said, when we did our calculations, that there were 2 to the 7th blocks. And when we access the first block, we would get a miss. But for all subsequent accesses to that block, we get hits. And so because we would have to do this, because only half of our array fits in the memory, we would have one miss the first time we load in the first half of the array for all 2 to the 7th blocks. And then when we load in the second half, we would have that again. So we would have twice as many. And so we'd have 2 to the 8th misses.
So any questions on this?
And so then we got to this problem. And so in this problem, we went through and we loaded the cache. And so the cache is still half the size. The first, so it would hold the first half of the array on the first as it goes through. And then when it reaches the middle part of the array, it would replace all of the values in here with the second half of the array. And so when we try to run this loop, we would get no locality because it's holding the values on for the second half of the array. Since only half of our array fits in cache, after we exploit all the temporal locality with the first half of the array, we have to move the second half into the cache. And so for the second for loop, we're accessing this array, but the second half is in cache, and we're accessing the first half. So we have to bring the first half into cache, which then replaces all the stuff in the second half. And so here we have 2 to the 8th, and then we have that 2 to the 8th thing happening again. And so twice 2 to the 8th misses for this second example. So any questions on this? So then we proposed a even more interesting example where we had some struct. And we could think of the struct similarly to the 4 kilobyte array. And so for this 4 kilobyte array, we had this block structure. And I provided this reminder that structs are simply arrays in memory. And so here, this four-int array would just get translated to 16 bytes. So 4 times 4, 16. And then this size T struct is just 8 bytes. And the pointer is 8 bytes as well. And so, whoops. And so as we can kind of think about this as before. So the first byte's going to be first 4 bytes going to be A, second 4 bytes going to be B, and then they're going to be 126 bytes afterwards. Sorry, and those ints are going to be 4 bytes long. And so This turns out to be 128 values times 4 bytes times 8 values, because there are 8 of them. And so 128 is, you just have to remember. So 2 to the 5th is 32, 2 to the 6th is 64. 2 to the 7th is 128. And so this is 2 to the 7th times 2 to the 4th, which is 2 to the 2 times 2 to the 3rd. And so this is 2 to the 12th. It's the same thing as 2 to the 2 times 2 to the 10th. 2 to the 10th is a kilobyte. And then this is 4 kilobytes. So it's the same size as our 4 kilobyte array. And so now we said, well, if we access these values in our first loop, where we're just accessing A, how many cache misses will we get? And so some ideas were proposed. Here's the first one, that we would load value 1 into our cache block and then value 2, item 1 and item 2, and they would be kind of next to each other. Does anybody want to articulate why this is not the case? Can anybody think about why this is not the case?
Is it because the items in the array are spaced out by that same constant value, it's not going to get mapped to the same set of the cache?
Yeah, exactly. So A is going to have all of this spacing here. So they're going to map. And remember, for the first half of our array, right, everything in the first half of our array maps to a unique block in our cache because we had enough space for it. So the first A value is going to get mapped to one block. The second one's going to get mapped to a third block, fourth block, and fifth block. And so each block in memory was going to be associated with a unique location. So now this is just the first half of the array. So what happens when we do the second half of the array? When we access the second half of the array, item 4, right, is going to get mapped to this block, just like it did with the previous integer override. So this is going to go away. Item 5 is going to get mapped to this block. Item 6 and item 7. And so we have 0 cache hits in this case. So any questions on this? Yes, exactly. Because here, not cold, because we already pulled it in, but conflict. And we have all of this, we still have all of this free space in the array. So, because each of these addresses, right, each spot in our cache before, right, had a unique spot for every block for the first half of the array. So this is going to get mapped to this block, and then other parts of the array are going to get mapped to another part. So this is A. This is B, and this is the first element, erase of 0 and erase of 1. And then the rest of the array gets mapped in here. And then the second block, B, and so on. And so when we look at the second iteration of the loop, these values would get replaced directly. So on the first iteration, you can think about the cache as looking like this. We'll have our first block, and then our second block, and then our third block, and then our fourth block towards the end. But all of this unused space, because we didn't pull in anything in between. And then now when we have to access ISA4, it's going to map to this block.
So it's going to override that block.
And so the next time when we have to access I sub 0 or B sub 0 in the second loop, it's going to contain I4 here. And so that will get kicked. Yeah.
I guess I have one. If you had a fully associative cache for this project.
Yes. So if it was fully associative and we could put anything anywhere and we didn't have this kind of set mapping, then it would be able to hold it.
So then you would only have 4 misses.
Let me think about it. If your fully associative cache could hold, this is 16 bytes, 16 bytes times 8. So if it could hold that much, then you'd have eight misses, yeah.
Okay, and then the other part was like, why can you guarantee that I4 is going to have to I0?
So because of how we have arranged our cache, because of how we're setting the index bits, and we know that it's a certain, let's see how I can kind of articulate this clearly.
So we know that each item in the first half of our array is going to map to a fixed location, a unique location in the cache. So when we shift over X number of bits, what's going to change is going to be our tag bits that are associated with that. But our set bits will then loop around. Do you see? Because the set bits do the grouping. Just like
kind of with our example where it was like 0, 0, 1, 0, and then our tags was 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, and then our example was 0, 0, 0, 1, and then this was back to 0, 0, and 0, 1. And our set size here is unique since each of these addresses is unique, so this would be 0, 0 here, which would be this first address. After we get to the end of the array, right, that means we're in this new tag bit section. So this is going to be the next one that's going to get placed here. So the tag will be different for it, but the set will loop around to 0, 0, which will be here.
Because it's two,
there are two ways of kind of looking at it. The first way is that the end one is going to be 2 to the 7th slots away, or 2 to the 7th times the number of bytes away, 2 to the 7th bytes away to the next slot. I don't know how to make it more intuitive. I guess I should have kept the other slides.
Another way of explaining it is if you write out the distance, so the distance between the two, between I0 and I4 is 2 to the 7th, if you write that out in binary, and lots of zeros. When you add that to something, you don't change any of the
We can talk about it more offline or now if you want. Okay, so any other questions?
So this notion of cache locality is like critical, very important.
So there are some cache optimization techniques that you might have seen before.
So here are two for loops. And what these for loops do is they take some matrix or two-dimensional array and say this is of size 3, so it's 3 by 3. And it contains a collection of values in the array. And it scales it by 2. So what that does is it takes every value in the array and scales each value by 2, multiplies each value by 2. And so if the array is organized in row major order, we can think about the first row as being the first set of bytes in memory, up to 3. And the second row is the second sets. And the third row as the third set of bytes in memory. And so one of these loops works a little bit more efficiently than the other.
Can anybody see which one and why?
The second one is more efficient because when you access the other two array, they're next to each other in memory because they're not jumping around.
Yeah, exactly. So here, for this one, we're going over I, and so we're going over each row. So we're accessing this one, then this one, then this one. In this kind of view, it looks like there's a lot of temporal locality, but here, you notice in this kind of row major ordering, there's not a lot of temporal locality. It's here, and then here, and then here. While with this one, we're accessing the columns. So we would go here, and then here, and then here.
Oh, sorry, spatial locality, sorry. I'm sometimes sloppy with those words. Okay, any other questions?
It's just in general, like, if dimensions of your array get bigger, like if you ran
Row major is always going to be the first. Index 0 is always going to be at the lowest address. Index 0, 0 is always going to be at the lowest address. Is that what you're asking?
Let's say you have like a larger array than just two-dimensional array, and you have three-dimensional loops. You want your
inner loops
over the first index, like your either
way, first index, the row. So a three-dimensional array is a pointer to a two-dimensional array. So the first row would be pointers to two-dimensional arrays. So it would be a pointer collection. So if you are doing that, then for a spatial locality, you'd want the row for your most nested array, whatever the pointer is to the second one. So here, I'll kind of draw it out.
So if you have a three-dimensional array, the first top-level array is going to be a pointer array to another array. And this array is going to be your two-dimensional array. So you'd want to have locality in the columns of this array, not this array. Yeah, because if you're doing locality here, right, you have to pull in this array because it's a pointer, and then if you're here, then it's not good. But you want to go to here, to your nested array, and so on. And then as you add dimensions, you just add pointers to each level.
So the question is, as you add dimensions to your array,
so this is your first, say we take a four-dimensional array where it's a pointer array to a final set of arrays here. What's your question about this structure?
Yes, it does, because you want to pull in, like, if you go to the array with pointers, right, then you're pulling in your lower array, and then you go to the next one, and then you're pulling in that other lower array. You want to be iterating over the lowest level most efficiently. Sorry, I didn't understand your question. Thank you, Charles. Thank you, Professor Reese. Yeah. Okay, any other questions?
Just to kind of point something out here, for another kind of strategy for looping over this array is instead of indexing into it using double brackets notation, we can calculate the next index by doing the size of the array. So this is 3x3 in this example. So, or row index. So we start off with 0. So when it's 0, it doesn't matter what I is. J will give us our offset. So 0, 1, 2. And then when I is 1, then it jumps up here. So it would be 3. Plus 0 is just 3, plus 1, 4, and 5. And so this is kind of a simple alternative to kind of indexing into the array. And you'll need to do this for the cache homework. Okay. So let's look at a more complicated example where sometimes loop ordering, even though loop ordering will matter a lot, and particularly we'll need to pay attention to the behavior in the inner loops. So let's just do a quick matrix multiplication refresher. So here's some matrix B and another matrix A. And we're going to multiply both of these matrices. So It's just row by column, and so we'll do 1 and 7, multiply those, 7, 18, and 33. So 2 and 9, 3 and 11, and then we add those up to get 58, which is our value here. And so we're going to explore writing some code to do matrix multiplication, and in particular, we're going to look at the inner loop behavior of this code and try to analyze how many cache misses we get for this inner loop. We're going to make some assumptions about the cache. We're going to assume it's 32 bytes. And the reason that we're doing this is because we're going to assume it holds four doubles that are 8 bytes each. So our array will hold four doubles. And we're using doubles as opposed to ints because we're going to do multiplication for just to kind of change the example. I'm sorry. And we're also going to assume that the matrix is really large. So it's so large that it won't fit in our cache. And the cache isn't even big enough to hold multiple rows. So we can't hold like two or three rows in this matrix. We'll assume that we can even only hold like a small part in our cache. And so as Professor Rees pointed out, one of the things that we're going to do for our analysis is we're going to look at the pattern in the innermost loop. So we're going to look at the behavior in the inner loop for our solution. And so there, just as kind of a refresher, we're going to assume that the two-dimensional array is going to be arranged in row major order, like we saw before. So this will be our first one. And as we step through each of the columns in the array, we get successive accesses. And if the block size is greater than the size of the value that we're reading, so in this case, our block size is 32, and our doubles are 8, then we can exploit spatial locality. And just like before, where we got one miss for every four accesses, we'll get a miss rate of the size of A, so 8 divided by our box size. And this is in case this is four doubles, and this works out to 1/4 as well, or 0.25 miss rates. And then stepping through columns, right, where we're just looking at the first value in our block size array, right, we get misses on every single one of those here. And so we'll have 100% miss rate for our column accesses. So any questions about this? Okay. And so here's a proposed solution for matrix multiplication, where we're going to go through and for each row, I, and each column, J, we're going to calculate the sum of all of the values in I. So we're going to loop over K, all the values in J, or in B, looping over the column here. And then we're going to calculate, we're going to assign the sum to some array C. And so for the first one, because we're going in row order, right, and we're pulling in 8 bytes and our cache size is 32, we're going to get a quarter of hits for the row accesses in A. And for the accesses in B, we're going to get all misses because it's column-wise accesses, so 100% misses. And then C, we're just writing to a single value over and over again. So say no misses. And it turns out that just like with that scaling example, we can permute these loops. We can change the order of these loops in whatever way we want. And as we change the order of the loops, what we're actually changing is our row-wise, column-wise, and fixed-based accesses of our arrays. And so there are 6 permutations here, perms. And so we'll look at all 6, and we'll actually see which of the 6 is actually the best. In particular, the thing that you want to focus on is the row column-wise and fixed space accesses. So we can make any one of these fixed space access, row access, or a column access. So this, and we could choose any access order that we want. And so you might be able to see off the top of your head which access strategy would be the best, but we'll look at all of them. So this is just another permutation of the first loop. This is the jth loop first, and then the ith loop and the k loop. And in this case, we have the same kind of fixed approach where the row it's row wise, column wise, and then fixed in our output. And because it's row wise for A, we're going to get 25% miss rate, and then 100% miss rate for B. And fixed for because C is fixed, it's just going to be zero. Here's another permutation, the Kij permutation, in which we hold A fixed and we do row-wise accesses in both B and C. And so for B and C here, because we're doing row-wise accesses, we get hit rates of a quarter here and a quarter here, and A is fixed, so it's zero. So our total miss rate for this one is 0.5. This is the best one so far. Another permutation is the JKI permutation, and in this case, we're doing column-wise accesses in A and column-wise accesses in C and fixed accesses in B. And because we're doing column-wise accesses, we're going to have misses on every access. And so this is going to be total miss rate of 2. And then the next permutation is KJI, and these are both column-wise accesses. And so as you can see, they're all misses here. So the thing to kind of note about these loop permutations is that based on whether or not we do, the order of these loops matter a lot for calculating the number or determining the number of misses that we have in our cache. Just to note kind of on these load store operations, so here we have two loads from A and B, but we're doing our store outside the loop, and so because we're only looking at the, we're only analyzing the inner loop's behavior, we're ignoring this particular store. So there are two stores and zero loop, two loads and zero stores in the inner loop, and our miss rate from our previous calculations was 1.25. And this is our best one. These are our best combinations here. There are two loads in the inner loop and one store. So this isn't great, but our miss rate is really low because it was two row accesses. And so these 2 to 255. And then for our second one, there's two loads and a store. And this is the worst because it was two column accesses of 1 and 1 for 2. And so if you graph these over time with increasing array sizes and the number of cycles for the inner loop, how long it will take, the first two, or the last, the JKI and IKJ, both row accesses, actually does the best as their array size increases. So any questions on this? So there is a technique for doing even better, kind of not having this kind of trade-off where we're just improving temporal locality in one array, or just improving temporal locality with these basic row accesses. We could do even better. And so here's our simple matrix multiplication example. Here's the notation that I talked to you about before. And there's a cool math trick that we can do to get even better locality. So let's make some assumptions here. So we're going to say this is a matrix of doubles. So it's going to be 8 bytes long. And we're also going to assume the matrix is square. So it's an n by n matrix. And the cache block here, each of these cache blocks, is going to hold 8 doubles. And we're going to say the cache is much, much smaller than n. So there's no way that we could fit this whole line in cache. So on the first iteration, as we go through this row, pulling in the first row, we're going to have 1/8 misses for each row, and they're going to, or each of these chunks, and they're going to be n of them. And so we have 1/8 n misses for our first one. And then for the columns, for each n axis, we're going to have a miss. So we're going to have a total number of 9 times n over 8 misses in our cache.
So any questions about this for our matrix multiplication example?
And so the thing to kind of note, though, is if our cache block is 8 doubles wide, when we're loading in all of these doubles here for this access, we're pulling in all of this extra stuff, but these doubles never get loaded. We're going to try and figure out a strategy that lets us kind of exploit this kind of blocking behavior that we can get with caches. And so on the second iteration, say we're here and we're doing this row, we're going to have the same misbehavior. So 1 for every 8 times n of them plus n misses for this one. And so that's going to be 9n over 8 misses. And then so for the whole cache, I should have kind of highlighted this. Sorry, I shouldn't have written it here. But for the whole cache, they're going to be 9/8 misses for every iteration. And we're going to iterate over all n elements. And this is a square matrix, so it's n by n. So there's a total of n squared elements in here. So we're going to get 9 over 8 times n squared elements in our cache. So this is going to be the number of misses that we get with this kind of regular iteration approach. So one of the cool tricks is that you can still get the same result for matrix multiplication if you, instead of doing it on a line-by-line basis, you do it in these mini, you divide the matrix up into mini matrices called blocks. And then what you do is you can pull all of these blocks into your cache so you can exploit all of this locality here. And I have another slide that kind of shows this. And you can do this multiplication on a blockwise basis. So here's a simple 3x3 matrix. And I've divided it into 4 blocks. And it turns out if you do this block times this block plus this block times this block plus this block times this block and so on, you'll get the final output for this block here because it corresponds to this row and this column. And so why don't you guys look at this example and then as an exercise, try to calculate the result for the output block of the C matrix in the top hand corner here. So we'll spend like 2 minutes on that.
Okay, who needs more time? Okay, so does anybody want to propose a solution? Which blocks do we multiply? Which submatrices do we multiply? Yep. And did anybody come up with a solution?
No, so the result would be another 2x2 matrix.
But so 118, 134, 66, and 88.
And this matrix value is actually the first quadrant of your resultant matrix.
And so this is the notion of blocking, where you're kind of dividing each chunk into these blocks.
And you can get a lot of temporal locality because you access this one and this one, this one and this one, this one and this one.
And in particular, we'll go through and analyze the amount of temporal locality you actually get.
So each cache block will hold 8 doubles. And we assume that the cache is a lot smaller than n, so the whole thing can't fit in it. And 3 blocks can fit into the cache. B is going to be the width of the block, so that's going to be b squared values. And so, b times b, b squared values. And so 3 of them can fit completely in the cache. And so for on the first iteration, we're going to load in this block here. And then for every n access that we have for our first one, an eighth of them was a miss. And now this is an n or b by b section. So this would be n over 8 times n of those. So this would be, in our block size definition, b squared over 8 misses for this block. So for each iteration, we have b squared over 8 misses for each block. And there are n over b blocks, where b is our block size. And so we're going to do this for n over b and n over b times. And so there are going to be 2 n over b blocks, in each of which we'll have b squared over 8 accesses. And so this will be n over b misses in our new block structure.
So any questions on this?
And at the end of it, our cache will look like this, or we'll have these values in our cache. Notice it's a lot more filled than before. And so for our second iteration, it's going to be the same, because this was our end state of our cache, but now we need to load in this block and this block. And so it's going to be 2 to the n over b. It's the number of blocks total. And this is the misses per block. And so on the second iteration, it's also going to be n times b over 4. And so this is the case for every iteration. And so the total number of misses that we're going to get is going to be the total number of blocks, which is going to be n over b times n over b. So n over b squared times the number of misses per block, which is going to be n cubed over 4b. So this is our total misses. And so a really interesting thing here is that our total number of misses gets scaled by this block factor. And so with non-blocking, we have 9 over 8 misses. But with blocking, we're able to reduce the number of misses scaled by our block size, our block factor b.
So this is still nested. I have code that does this if we want to look at it. I can kind of step through that. If we want.
But the idea is that you're going to compute, just like we did in a simple example with the colored squares,
you would compute the matrices separately for each colored square.
And maybe, so this is also the suggestion that we could fit a certain number of blocks in the cache. So just kind of as summary, and then I'll throw up the code for doing this that you guys can kind of look at in your free time and kind of close it there. Cache memories can have a significant impact on performance. So that should be kind of the takeaway from this kind of series. And you can write programs to kind of exploit the cache. And when you're writing these programs, it's really important to focus on the inner loop, where the bulk of the computation and memory accesses is going to happen. And then you want to try and maximize spatial locality by reading objects within stride of one. And so this, you could think of the strides as just the block size. You want to try and read values that are close to each other. And you want to try and maximize temporal locality by using data objects often. And so these block structures really allow us to optimize our spatial locality and our temporal locality here for accesses. Okay, here's the code for doing this, and then we could chat about it afterwards. But I'm going to close it there. See you guys on Thursday.